There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday edition. 251-343-0106 for a call or a text. Once again, 251-343-0106. In addition, with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can leave us a talkback message. Hey, there's an idea for Father's Day. If your budget's tight, why don't you do this? Why don't you set up the FM Talk 106.5 app on Dad's phone? If it says, I like that station, I'd like to have it on my phone. Well, if you're a cool dad like me, because you have an Android phone, of course, you go to Google Play. But if you're a hipster like you probably are, you're running that iOS, go to the App Store, either place, look for FMTALK 1065. And then you'll see our logo. That's the app. Download it and enjoy. You can text us from there, call. Our podcast posts there first. All our shows, schedule information's on there. Our social media feeds with breaking news are all in one place, all in the app, the FM Talk 106.5 app. Also coming up in just a little bit, we'll check back in with Dalton. He's out at Capital Tractor. And now it's good, and I said it was an annual thing, but I paused for a second. Dr. Ruth Carmichael is joining us from Senior Marine Scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab, also Professor of Marine Sciences, University of South Alabama. I don't think it was annual. I think I missed last year, so mea culpa.
Ah, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Actually, I see you because I'm here, which
yes.
is exciting.
Yeah, we do this on phones sometimes. Like, we've done it, but there's been stories about whale strandings and all that, you know, where it's kind of, we have to get you on right then. But it's good to have you in for conversation and talk about, we're talking about marine mammals. This is your thing, but I want to talk first up here, manatees. And it's how you and I met years ago. You know, and I don't even know how long ago it was, but... everybody has their own story, but I'd seen manatees in Florida and all that, but I was fishing in the Tensaw River, in the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and a manatee came up right by the boat. We're sitting there cruising down the bank of the Tensaw, and I went, well, that's a manatee. I think people need to know about this, and I dug around and I found, I'm like, you're the person I needed to tell.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate that. I think it was about 20 years ago
when
we started the program. It's crazy.
Yeah, it was in its infancy, and now it's a thing. People know, that we have manatees. It's not the shock, baby, that it used to be.
I have students now, we've moved into a stage of, you know, there's so much that we now know about these animals and that they are regular, at least seasonal visitors. There's evidence for year-round animals, you know, figuring out how to stay here. We know there's more animals coming here than there were in the past. And, you know, so we know a lot about them and where they're going and what resources they're using. But we still, you know, we're now going out and learning more about public perception. And so I have a student who you might run into her if you're out at any of the boat launches. Okay. She's doing what are called public intercept surveys to try to understand what really is the reach of our program. Who are we maybe missing in the community? And, you know, it's probably much like, you know, in your job, right? You have to kind of keep the messaging going all the time because people have a short attention span. No offense to anybody out there. We all do, right? We have short attention spans, getting shorter every day. And there's also new people coming in.
That's the thing. You think you've talked to everybody about something, and then you go to the next person and has not heard anything about it.
Exactly. So when we're still seeing that, but, you know, just to put it into perspective, we're now getting, I think we've got about 8,000 sightings that we have processed in the last 20 years.
Wow.
We now serve as a sighting clearinghouse, not just for Alabama, and Alabama, Mississippi, but we covered the entire Southeast United States. We have some international sightings that we've processed. And
wait a second, you've expanded a lot here.
Yeah. We don't turn anybody away. So anybody anywhere in the world who Googles, you know, sees a manatee, mm-hmm. Googles, finds us, whatever, give us a call. We will process your sighting report. We will put it in our database.
So you take it, you put it in the database, and then where does that go? Does it get mapped where people can see that, or like if somebody from somewhere else calls one in?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do keep it's not real time because we're not allowed to do real time telling you where manatees are, because unfortunately it puts a, you know, like a bullseye on their back.
Yeah,
too much love.
Right? Yeah, everybody's going to bother them. Yeah.
But we can, we do have a map, so you can go to our website and you can actually find us. You can Google manatee or go manatee.dizzle.org or .edu. And you will find, you can find a map and you can pull up by year and you can see where all the sightings were in that year. And you can just scroll through since the dawn of our program.
You can kind of see the hot spots. I want to talk about that, but I want to also talk about, and I don't know if there's a baseline or not. Maybe you can tell me if there is, because is there any way to compare X number of sightings this year? I mean, is the baseline 20 years ago, or is there historical data that says here's the baseline of the number we thought we have, here's what we have now? Dr. Carmichael, anything like that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And certainly when we started our program, the first thing we did was we gathered all the data that were available. So it was everything from old newspaper reports to what was being held by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other records. And, you know, unfortunately, that gives us an idea that there were some history of mm-hmm. the longevity of sighting reports. But we've got sighting reports in Alabama. The earliest is a deceased manatee in 1912.
Okay, because so you know I was about to ask you, when's the first one? Okay, 1912, somebody
usually
said.
Make people guess, but yeah.
I would have, yeah, I mean, that's so we know, and if they were coming here at 1912, they'd been coming here before
right.
that.
And we know there are manatees, for example, in the fossil record in Louisiana, you know, so animals being here isn't the new thing. What likely has happened is as their populations declined, they moved into, you know, primarily just staying in the core areas in Florida where they have year-round habitat and they have cold water or warm water, depending on the season.
Because
of the springs. Yeah, but then now as population recovery has been so successful, plus we're seeing long-term environmental change that's allowing these animals, and it's a necessity that they have to spread out.
Right.
I think we're really seeing range re-expansion. And so our baseline now, and we actually, I know everyone wants to hear about published papers, but we published a paper on this where we did an abundance estimate and we took our first few years of our program and compared it to metrics from the last few years of our program.
Okay, it makes sense, yeah.
And estimated during that time that there's probably about, on average, an increase of 10 animals in the seasonal record. So if you look at any given time during the peak of the season, we had estimated maybe 30 to 40 manatees in Mobile Bay area in Alabama waters.
This was from before, or this is now?
Is the early days of
our
program.
Okay, early days. Okay.
Because we really sort of set the baseline with our data, and then we had to compare that to, has changed through time, we now estimate there's between 40 and 50 animals during that peak season.
Okay.
And so we are seeing evidence of that increase in numbers of animals, at the very least, that are coming here during that peak season, and then how many animals are passing through, because they're animals that continue on, and we know go all the way down into Texas or down to the Texas-Mexico border, which is the furthest area to the west and south that we have sightings. So there's animals that are constantly sort of moving through, but Mobile Bay itself is one of the major migratory stopovers on this route as the animals are moving.
Really, we're not a side road. We are
one of the major migratory stopovers. So most of the animals that are coming back and forth out of Florida are stopping here. And they're stopping here long enough that they're either not going anywhere else and they're going back, or they're taking a little side trip, maybe just for a little while, over into Mississippi, over into Louisiana, and then coming back.
So manatees, they have some site fidelity. I mean, obviously the stuff down in Florida, that core area, but other areas, expansion out there, they have site fidelity. Like, can you say this bunch is probably going to come back next year? I mean, is it?
So there's sort of two questions wrapped up in that? And the answer is yes and yes. So we do see the same animals come back, and we know this from tagging and we know it from photo ID. The same animals will come back year after year. So there's an animal that was a really long-term, well-known animal out of Florida, very famous, named after a famous scientist. And this animal would spend every summer for like 11 years in a row was sighted in Mobile Bay, right? So we know the same animals are coming back. It's not accidental. But we also know, because of our ability to tag these animals and follow them, that they travel not unlike the way we travel when we take road trips. So, you know, not everybody stops at the same place for gas and food.
Right.
But there are a few places, like with the Buc-ee's.
Yeah, but it shows Mobile the Buc-ee's.
Stop, right?
Yes, yes.
And so manatees kind of do the same thing. There are some animals that travel quickly and get to a certain key spot. There are others that may meander, and they'll stop off in little places along the way. But there are these key migratory stopovers, and then there are these key migratory endpoints. And that's how we know, by looking at the time that the animals spend repeatedly in certain locations, that site fidelity, that Mobile Bay is a migratory endpoint on the northern Gulf of Mexico for many animals.
Coming right back, I got a question about how far they go one way or the other when we come back. Dr. Ruth Carmichael, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, University of South Alabama. We're talking manatees.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And, yeah, calls and text at 251-343-0106. Got some of those to get into. Dr. Ruth Carmichael, Senior Marine Scientist at Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and also Professor of Marine Scientist at the University of South Alabama, and a person who is... studies marine mammals and kind of a signature one around here, even though we could do another show someday about whales and all that. But the one most people have a chance to see, because they come up by people's, you know, by people's pier or come by their boat, up, is manatee.
Yeah.
And you, and this is, having known that we're a manatee place for a long time, like I said, since I first reported 2 decades ago to you, but that we are kind of... we're not ancillary. We're like the main spot up here on the northern Gulf Coast.
Yeah, we are part of their range. And what's interesting is when we first started our program, we didn't know that. This area was considered extra limital, or, you know, and manatees themselves were considered accidental. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, actually within a year, we were able to figure out that this was not accidental.
So, wait, so let's say, we could just assume, which is tough in science, I know, but that the population was X and it stayed X for a couple of years. At one point, people were saying it's extra limital, this accidental. But then when you started paying attention and researching it, you go, no, there's a whole bunch of them here.
That's right.
Is that so in regular people language, that's what happened?
That's what happened.
This text here, let me go. This is from High Plains Drifter. What's the furthest north in Alabama there's been a manatee sighting?
Yeah, so this one might knock your socks off if you know where Claiborne,
Alabama
is.
Claiborne Lock and Dam,
About 70 miles north of Mobile. That is the farthest north that we've had reported manatee. It scared the heck out of the guy operating the dam. What kind of big fish is this?
Yep.
But we had great photos and video, and the animal went right up to the lock. And
they should lock them. They should lock the manatee through. So they get the manatee in there, fill it up.
Well, what's interesting is we found out that particular manatee just about 2-3 months later was seen in Tampa. So we know that he was a migrant from Tampa.
But from up at Claiborne, Lock and Dam to Tampa in 2 months?
About 2 months. Yeah, and that includes meandering, right?
Yeah, because they don't. Yeah, they're not running. You know, they're not running a heads up navigation Garmin, running straight line.
At times when they want to,
and do they cut that? Yeah, do they cut the Gulf? Because you know, so much of the tagging research with fish has been very interesting to me. Like some of the things we assumed, like okay, the tarpon all come up this through the Big Bend and all come here, and then you get the research back and go, yeah, a lot of them do, and then some cut straight across. What about manatees?
Yeah, it was transformational. The first two animals that we tagged very quickly showed us that we knew everything that we thought we knew was completely wrong. We assumed that they went out into the Gulf. And you do get sighting reports for the animals, usually from people who are swimming, and they have a herd will come past them. But what we found is that these animals will typically stay actually in the intercoastal waterway. So they will.
I was about to say, the ICW probably now put some near boat props, but it probably is helpful to them.
So what we think they're doing, and we actually we were the first to scientifically demonstrate this right here in Alabama, not in Florida, in Alabama.
All right, I like it.
That these animals will use boating channels as migratory corridors. And so we actually had video, and we have a paper where you can actually go and you can link to the video and see the tag movement. But we see an animal moving through, it's the very first animal we ever tagged, moving through Mobile Bay, going right into the ship channel, purposefully taking the ship channel down bay as the temperature is getting colder, getting ready to migrate, getting about halfway down bay. Then as the temperature goes back up again, doesn't cut over to the shoreline, but goes up to the actual boating channel that goes into Dog River.
Yeah.
And takes the boating channel up into Dog River, then comes back out, gets back into the shipping channel, then goes over across and goes down into the ICW. So they are purposefully using
it's
our boating and shipping channels.
It must be temperature-based, because I'm thinking if you're coming down the ship channel, and you cut a, like they could cut over before that and still be in depth enough, they're not, you know, going to be rubbing their bellies, but they purposely went down and got in the...
They purposefully used the boating channels. And so we did an... That prompted us to do an entire study of all of the data that we had to see what these patterns were. And we believe it's two things. One is because those boating channels also kind of act like flumes. So energetically, you can think about it as a lazy river.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when the water's going out, you can get in it and it helps you swim, right?
Sure.
And when the water's coming in, it helps you swim the other direction. So there is probably some energetic benefit, but then also definitely a temperature benefit. We have actually seen in the hottest part of summer, manatees will sleep in boating channels. And that may sound like a really bad idea.
Mm-hmm. But they don't know that.
For a manatee. But I think, you know, for the most part, they navigate it. I mean, you think about, given the number of animals we already talked about that come through here, we have relatively few mortalities.
Right.
So most of these animals are doing what they need to do and they're surviving it. But they are making use of these deeper holes for cold water in the summer. And then similarly, they'll use what we call cold holes, but they'll use them, they'll become warm relative
right.
to ambient in the winter.
And they're following those back out.
And they'll follow those to find refuge either way, yeah.
And I wonder how they, temperature must have a lot, because they don't echolocate, do they? There's no
echolocation. They don't echolocate.
There's no echolocation.
They have incredibly good sensory perception for temperature and salinity. So they can find...
So they're tasting salinity, basically.
Yes, and they have little hairs.
Yeah, sure, the whiskers, uh-huh.
A little vibrissae. So they have really great sensory perception, even though they don't have the best, like, visual...
Right, but let's follow one out here. Okay, we're leaving. It's getting fall here. It's coming out like you talk about, moving down in stages. Not, you know, it goes and goes. You get out, whether you hit the ICW, hit the mouth of the bay. How do you know to take a left turn?
Yeah, so that's a
because there's warm water going the other way too. I mean the. Right,
it's
there's
a bigger question than manatees. It's how does any animal migrate?
Sure,
right?
But we talk about with you know. Birds and waterfowl and migratory, you know, birds. I've studied a bunch and some of the things, but are they, the manatees aren't doing the same thing, right?
Looking so we're seeing them, the major migratory cue is thought to be temperature. So when it gets to be about 18 degrees C, which is about 68 degrees Fahrenheit, so
right.
I'm like a manatee, I get cold at that temperature too. That's when they tend to get too cold, and that what's prompt them to go find warmer waters.
Okay.
And so the only major source of year-round warm water is in Florida because of the combination of springs and power plant outfalls. You know, we have looked at the possibility. We actually did an aerial thermographic imaging survey to see if we had areas here in our waters that animals could be using as refuge. So
mm-hmm.
are there these sort of warm
some
spots
kind of like full-time refugia
that
yeah.
you can see? And it seems that most of ours are transient. They're not long-term consistently warm enough. But we do have enough springs that, and this is a nut we haven't fully cracked, that under certain conditions, and I think it may have to be a combination of temperatures and water table level as to what the groundwater is doing, but I think there are certain times of year when we have springs that do provide a better refuge for them, and we do tend to have strandings in cold seasons at those locations because that's where
well,
the
there's a clue yeah that they
yeah.
that they were
yeah.
gathered there at the last, you know, few degrees before 68 or below and then
yeah.
below. I have one more question, but I don't
sure.
want to run out of time. I just wonder when they go south through the bay or whatever, and they're going to go to Florida. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, most currents run down the beach east to west, the way we form our barrier islands and all that. Is that because when they get out there to the mouth of the bay, or the temperature at that point is going to be generally the same, east and west, but they know to hang a left turn and go to Florida.
So it's a combination of the sensory perception for temperature, for salinity, and also memory, right?
So that's where I was getting. Component. So there is that memory.
Absolutely.
All right. People today see a manatee. Anytime this summer see a manatee, they want to report the manatee. What do they do?
There are multiple options. The easiest one is to give us a call at 1-866-493-5803, 24/7 toll free. We got
and y'all just Google that. I know you're riding down the road like, I can't write that down, Dr. Carmichael.
Yeah. We also have an online reporting system. So I always joke, if you're antisocial, you just don't want to talk to anybody, mm-hmm. You can go to our website and there is an online reporting form, super easy.
And the website is?
And we'll call you back. It's manatee.disl.edu.
Okay.
Or you can just Google us, Manatee Sighting Network, and should be the first thing that pops up.
Okay, so to report one, they took a picture, didn't take a picture, does it have, or they just tell you where they were?
Yeah, there's a series of questions that we'll ask you. It's all very structured, super easy. The main thing is where, when, and what did you see? And then if you have photos, that's fantastic. We just ask people to stay at least 100 feet away. These are still protected species. They're endangered here in the state of Alabama, threatened federally. So just make sure you're not doing anything that changes the animal's behavior. But otherwise, enjoy, watch, video, pictures. In fact, the more of those that you get and share with us, we can maybe even identify the animal.
You'd be like, I know that manatee.
Yeah, exactly. And we can give you some information back about the animal.
Very cool. And then for everybody else also, they can go look. They can go to the website now and learn more about manatees by going to the same one for reporting.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you.
Dr. Carmichael, once again, thank you. Sorry it was 2 years, but we'll make it sooner. Actually, I want you to come back and talk whales and all that with us.
Anytime.
All right. Dr. Ruth Carmichael, always fun. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And this hour is a lot of fun. And just loaded up with folks. We probably should do this. President of this year's Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo and Professor Emeritus, also at Marine Sciences at the University of South Alabama. Chase Farley, good to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
And everybody else who's been on this hour is associated with Dolphin Island Sea Lab and the University of South Alabama Marine Sciences. And also, this guy does both duties. He does all the science stuff, but he's also the emperor of judging for the Alabama DC Fish and Rodeo, Dr. Sean Powers.
Hello.
Hello, emperor. Good to see you.
Official judge.
You know, we should have
the official.
Yeah, that
it's on the shirt.
The judge.
The judge.
The judge. And side conversation as we try to mash up conversations. I just was asking him when Dr. Carmichael was out in the lobby if he could weigh manatees and see. If like,
you know, I mean, that's a good question. We've hung some mighty impressive fish from the crane.
We have.
But
we have.
I believe a manatee would tip the scale.
You know that's coming because Rihanna and I have been talking about the number of people yesterday on Facebook. There are people put, you know, it's AI-generated sharks swimming down Dolphin Street, and there's 100 comments, oh, my gosh, where are my kids? I'm scared for them.
We would be World Wide Web famous.
Yeah. If there was a manatee hanging from the big boom. So it is two things here we're going to talk about is rodeo coming up and Roy Barton Young Anglers Tournament coming up. But most importantly, y'all thinking about gifts for dad. Chase, take it away. You got more.
Yeah. Today is the day. Tickets are going in the stores. They are counting them at our building right now. And tickets will be on sale tomorrow. They're already available online. So go there, get a Father's Day gift. But they're going to be available in stores tomorrow.
Now, think about this. Not only giving the gift to dad, but you say, I got us tickets to fish the rodeo.
That's right. That's right.
So it's a thing, but it's also we're doing something together, Dad.
That's correct. That's correct. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's like you give him, I don't know, you give him whatever, a belt or something like that. It's really, the belt's for him. It's not, you know, you're not going
to. We really want you to get a $400 jackpot ticket with the regular ticket
right.
as well. So, yeah, it's a good Father's Day gift.
And it sets a date for you and Dad to do something for sure in the future. It's not, maybe we'll get together. It's like, no, Third weekend in July, we're fishing.
We're fishing.
Yeah, so I like it. So tickets on sale. You got the web versus people going to locations. Talk about where they find.
Yeah, you can go to Academy, every location, J&M Tackle over in Orange Beach, Pronto Pond right there in Theodore, and then Tackle This, Shoot That. So go in there, support local. We want you to buy your tackle and bait and everything you can there and give back to the community and also get the rodeo ticket. So, and we got our books in the stores as well with all the rules.
Yes, the much discussed rules.
That's right.
We might say that for a show in the future. I mean, speaking of the rules, here he is, the judge, Dr. Sean Powers.
Well, we all get together, and the rules are collective. The rules aren't my rules. They're not Chase's rules. They're obviously collective, and they haven't changed.
They haven't changed that much. We added that swordfish jackpot.
That's huge.
I don't know if we announced that last time. We're doing the swordfish jackpot. It's going to be a $400 ticket, but we've seen an influx of swords come in over the last couple of years, and I think it was in big game, and now it's its own.
It's jackpot. Its own thing.
It is.
And it also shows the partnership between us. I mean, they came to us and asked us what we would like, and swordfish is
meaning us. Meaning
sorry, the university.
Yeah, Marine
and the scientist. And we said just that we're seeing more and more swordfish in the Gulf. They're being targeted more. They seem to be being caught more, yeah. Which is great. But we don't know enough about them. Is there any way that we can encourage a category where we can actually start collecting otoliths for them? The eyes tell us a whole lot, and just get more specimens for swordfish. And so this worked out perfect.
We want to collect those numbers where you're catching them as well. So yeah. Me and Dr. Sean can really
go
study.
Go ahead and tell us your daytime sword spots, your nighttime sword
spots.
That's
right.
Again, you know, getting the fishermen to, all of them are so excited usually to hear what we're doing and everything. We would not want to discourage them. We will never ask for your exact numbers. That's like one of those scam callers.
Yeah.
Never ask for your exact numbers. If somebody's asking for your exact numbers, they're not a scientist.
Can y'all record that in the back so we can put a public service announcement? If you get a call from somebody representing themselves as associated with the rodeo, Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and University of South Alabama Marine Sciences asking for your numbers for a scamp spot, snapper spot, bottom relief where you catch swordfish, it's not real. Hang up. Right then, hang up.
That's right.
We appreciate a good location. We don't need all five decimal places.
Point on the map for us.
Hey, but I want y'all to explain this, too, because we've talked about it, and there's probably a lot of people that know. But there's probably a lot of people who don't know. You call it Fishmas for the scientists, right? So we're all fishing, having fun, except for the rodeo guys working their butts off. But we, the anglers, are having a big time. Y'all are working at the dock. The amount of research that gets done while we're out just having fun is amazing. And I think maybe you could tell the story through swordfish here. Like the collection that you probably will get, knock on wood, fishing will be good. What would that take you if y'all had to do it as scientists?
I mean, we're not good fishermen. Just because you study a species doesn't mean you can target one very well. And just the logistics. I mean, we're able to cover so many species and, again, sample a portion of the population that is just rare. Okay,
the biggest.
Largest individuals. Mm-hmm. All of our scientific efforts are all designed to be random, statistically rigorous, all those things. But that means you're not going to sample the very high end of the population size-wise because statistically they are rare.
You wanted to get the biggest of these species. Now we're not fishing. It's a scientific expedition to go catch them. How long would it take to get the number of big fish that we volunteer to bring back?
So gotcha. It would be weeks of cruise time, and it would just be logistically impossible, you know. And we're not the first to sample fishing tournaments. A lot of fishery scientists have figured this out, but this is unique. And all of our buddies throughout the U.S. and even internationally are jealous about the partnership, that they welcome us. I mean, when you walk onto the grounds, if you haven't seen, the footprint for the scientist and the footprint for the rodeo are about the exact same.
That's right.
Chase has to feed us as well as all of his folks. And just that level of cooperation. The other thing that is just invaluable is the amount of time my scientists and my students and students from other labs as well get to spend talking to the public. That's just a skill that you need with fishery sciences. Any natural resource management that's different than a lot of the other sciences, to be able to have those students get over the fear of talking to somebody, and they have to be able to explain it in terms that both don't insult someone because they're assuming that they don't know a lot that fishermen know, but also not getting too technical. And just they have to do that repeatedly. You know, that's why we have all of our students in the ice bin for the display case that we show.
Well, you have them in there working. You don't actually have the students in.
This is a student from Illinois. Compare that there, to
this
a student
is, this,
from
this
New
right
Mexico.
Here, 112-pound Becky, a pretty good Becky.
No, exactly. So, you know, they get to tell the story of the fish. They and, you know, get to interact with the public. And that's that ability to not only communicate scientifically with other scientists, but also with the fishermen out there, the rodeo gentlemen and ladies. Yep. Now, you know, it's just a wonderful experience. It's Fishmas because everybody's lined up to give us their fish.
Yeah, which is something.
We give them back, though. Minus a few parts.
But it's just
we give
cool.
them back.
It's just I want people to know who don't know about it. Like, you got the fun thing going on at the same time. Like, we're all having a great time, and this research being done anyway. All right, coming right back, more of this discussion. El Presidente of the Alabama Deep Sea Fish and Rodeo and the Emperor of the Way Station, all right here on this very show.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. By the way, Father's Day, Sunday, if you hadn't noticed, and once more to tell you more, President of Alabama DC Fishing Radio, Chase Farley, people can get tickets.
That's right.
As of...
Or right now, online, whatever. If you're a millennial, you can get you can go online and get them. And if you're old school like me, which I'm old school, but you can go in stores and pick them up.
I'm Gen X. I can go online.
That's right.
I used to like you, Chase, before you started this ageism stuff right now.
Yeah, the two Sean's in here are the same age.
That's right.
Be careful. All that. I do think it's cool when we talk about it, when you give a gift. You know, people say, I like to give experiences because people have so much stuff. Buying Dad a ticket for you and yourself to fish a rodeo is pretty cool. Hey, Dad, thinking about you, we're celebrating Father's Day today and third weekend in July, we're going to be fishing
together.
It'd
be an awesome present because also then you can tell the wife, what can I do? The kids gave it to
correct.
Me.
Correct.
That's a good point.
I mean, you want me to insult the children?
You're a marine biologist. You sound like a humanities sociologist in that. You're smart in that. Let's talk about, we talked about swordfish. That's really cool. What else category? What about blackfish or triple tail?
Yeah. Dr. Sean and them, that's your all's category that we're sponsoring this year. So we're doing a triple tail live weigh-in, and we're encouraging the anglers that fish the live weigh-in categories. And if you don't, to bring in a triple tail so that we can start tracking their movements. I'll let you speak on that more. But I think that's going to be hard to do since people love to eat them, but bring a dead one and a live one. So.
Yeah, we're hoping, we have this big study, triple tail cobia, and we can talk about that more. I know we've been on the show before talking about it, but we're going to put active tracking tags in them and would love the opportunity to tag them right there at the rodeo site and then see, you know, what
where they go.
So, and this is an opportunity for us to again, just work with the rodeo folks. We talk about conservation, what rules we need to change from a conservation point of view, not only regulation, but those were pretty much no rule changes because of that this year. And then they talked to us, hey, what can we do to help you out? And we talked about getting more swordfish samples, and now we're about triple tail. Yeah, you know, and I would love for somebody to bring us that 33-pound triple tail and let us put a tag and release it, but I'm, you know.
It probably. I remember a few years ago being behind some guys in line that had everybody on on that boat, they had the biggest blackfish I'd ever seen. I mean, one after another after another, there were some giants on that year. Let me ask you a quick question that's kind of self-serving. Keeping them alive, right? I learned a lot. I used to fish in the redfish tour and all that, and you know, we worked hard. We keep and redfish, pretty hardy. Blackfish the same?
Blackfish are pretty hardy. I don't think as hardy as a redfish, but they're easier than
same,
a speckled
same
trout.
Systems. We could,
and
yeah,
we have a whole trout. Lot of people that have a whole lot of success with speckled trout. So
if you can keep, if you have the oxygenator and all that, they can keep trout alive, you're going to be fine with blackfish.
And
they're
going
to have a big enough one to put that blackfish in.
We're going to sample the ones that are turned in as well.
Okay.
Just for odorless and age and all of that information. We'll be doing that late into the day. Hopefully we'll finish before the music starts and everything.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because at some point over the last decade and a half, this thing that used to be a fishing tournament that had some people play music sometimes turned into the planet's largest multi-day saltwater fishing tournament and like little Bonnaroo. I get you. It's like little Bay
it's
Fest.
It's true.
Y'all got music all the days.
We do. Thursday night is Liar's Contest. I think you're judging. Mm-hmm. It's always a great time. Yeah. We got your cooler. It's going to be stocked full, so
excellent.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'd
be
great.
so we're going to have it's sponsored by Columbia this year. So they're going to they bring it in Bruce Smelly, which is a great local artist. Friday night, we're going to have Mustache the Band. My wife said she wanted 90s country all weekend. So we're going to
made a lot of people happy.
I did. So she picked right. So we're gonna have a great time.
Okay, and as we talk about, so that's going on, and that's all on y'all's Facebook page
it
and
is.
All that. And you don't have to, by the way, you don't have to be fishing in the rodeo to come out and see the music.
No, it's BYOB too. Yeah. So just bring your own coolers, have a great time, bring the family down. We always, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we got the crane. It's gonna lift up the big fish for all the kids to see. Dr. Sean and his team are going to have the scientists out there with the big ice box. Look at all the cool fish that are brought in. So it's a really good family event.
Oh, yeah. I mean, only a small percentage are actually ticket holders.
That's correct.
You know,
yeah.
Tell them folks, though, because they'll be like, well, I'm not fishing the rodeo. I'm not going to come down. I'm like, you don't have to even be fishing the rodeo to come to the music.
Yeah. Our latest numbers we've done, we have 100,000 spectators that visit us over the weekend.
Wow.
So it is, we're trying to sink the island.
I always look, no joke, flip it over on its end.
That's right.
I always look at y'all's ticket numbers, and which is a super impressive number, but
we're
yeah, 4,000. These are people, all of us fishing. I never thought about asking the other question.
100,000 spectators come through our site over the weekend.
I never even thought to ask that question. That's because I always kind of based it off the 4,000.
It's constant. I mean, with the music and all that.
We've had to expand our tent again this year. I mean, it's just, it keeps growing. We're running out of real estate. So we're going to have to plan. It's going to be a zigzag of tents eventually.
This is good. It's a good thing. And then also, we'd be remiss. We'd talk about big rodeo. I'm using technical terms like big rodeo, but the week before on that Saturday, Roy Martin, I think it's
one of my favorite tournaments.
68th, is it? 68th.
Roy Martin. Yeah, it's Dr. Sean can attest to this. It's probably one of the best tournaments on the Gulf Coast. Just seeing the kids bring in, I mean, he could have a little croaker and the biggest smile on his face. So that's always a great tournament, and that helps us fund our kids' shopping tour at the end of the year to take the underprivileged kids out, make sure they got presents and stuff for under their tree.
Well, and it takes, listen to this, and we'll talk about this in a future show. I've talked about it many times with y'all at the JCs. They take the kids out. They don't take the kids out to buy them gifts. They let them buy gifts so they can have gifts under the tree for mom and dad and their siblings. It's like the coolest thing.
It is.
Teaches giving and all that. Like, it's instead of just, hey, we're buying kids gifts, we're
taking
kids
to buy. Yeah, they have to buy for their other family members.
Which is,
it's a great principle.
No, and it's amazing all the work the JCs do. Obviously, y'all do even more than the rodeo, but the rodeo, I mean, a lot of your proceeds go directly to sponsor the graduate student. And then you do a whole lot of other charities.
We love our sponsorship with him. He is, his team is absolutely amazing. They are always down there, and they're one of us when they are there. I mean, they pitch in, help, and we really appreciate their support.
Well, looking forward to it for sure. And tickets on sale now. Get that Father's Day ticket purchased for you and Dad out there. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. See y'all tomorrow morning for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.